But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
So we have liftoff to the football championship. Thanks be to God. It wasn't looking good after the first three games, but Donegal Derry saved us yesterday with a match that had proper championship feel, Alan. Like, I mean, we've Michael Murphy coming on. He's getting hopped off by McInnes. He's getting trash talked by Brendan Rodgers. He doesn't seem to give a shit. He's not even paying attention to the two lads. But like, I mean, it just felt like this was championship. It was close. It was tense. And it was just a great game to watch.
Yeah, it was. It was real championship football and real Ulster championship football played in the best way possible. It was everything you'd expect from a game like that. And in fairness to Derry, I suppose after a league campaign, very positive league campaign, we were waiting to see could they follow that form into a big championship game. And I think when they look back at that this morning, I listened to Rory Gallagher after the game, and he was obviously very proud of his players, but I think they left a serious opportunity there behind to get a big scalp under their belts. And yeah, it was funny watching Michael Murphy. Like, I suppose he's just so used to it at this stage that every time he comes onto a field, he's always getting I'm sure he takes a good bit of trash talk, but he's such a big man himself. He's, like, as you say, he didn't even flinch, and he made a big difference when he came on, kind of without kind of doing that in spectacular, but I think it was 12-8 when he came in. They were four down, I think, and he just looked to have a very settling influence on the team. Obviously, he won a couple of frees, kicked a couple of decent frees as well. That, like, I wouldn't say they were very difficult frees, but it was still Ulster Championship. They had to be scored, and he nailed the two of them. So I thought he made a big difference when he came on, and probably had a very settling influence on the rest of the team around them. But I think it was definitely an opportunity lost for Derry. Like, they were four up, they had a penalty they maybe should have got, but they had a great goal chance in the second half to put them after 45 minutes, I think, the one off the crossbar. It was a great move. But look,
it's a terrible miss, that, though, isn't it?
It was a bad miss. Like, you need for Derry to win those games, trying to make the breakthrough, they're the sort of chances they need to take, and you don't get too many of them against a team like Donegal. It just needed a little bit more composure as they came across. Like, he could have bundled man ball everything into the net, and the goal would have stood. And it was unfortunate, but I think it was a crucial stage in the game. It kind of left Donegal in the game. And but in fairness to Derry, after that, they kicked a few scores and they went 12-8 up. But look, I suppose Donegal being Donegal, you can never write them off. They showed a good bit of bottleneck epic into that game, and obviously the score from Mark Brady at the end, there's not too many fellas in the country you can kick that score at that stage of a game. And I suppose when you're coming down the stretch last few minutes, he's the fella you want on the end of it. And they looked like they worked it to get him on the end of it, and it was a great kick, to be fair to him.
It was absolutely cruel, I suppose, Colm, in the end. Like, I mean, and Chrissy McCaig had done so well in McBurdy, he didn't give him a kick of it, if we're being honest. Did not give him a sniff of it until the last kick of the game, and he did his loop move, which Chrissy got a yellow card for, you know, turning around facing him, making sure this wasn't going to happen. I don't know what to say to poor Chrissy McCaig, who will be a nomination for performance of the weekend. Then McBrearty just does that.
Yeah, look, we spoke during the league a lot around how good Donegal were, and obviously the influence of Murphy and McBrearty. Obviously, Murphy didn't start the game, and you could see that Donegal, you know, weren't firing at all cylinders. They didn't seem, you know, didn't really seem up to it. Derry played it in their terms. They slowed the ball down a lot. They were happy enough to let Donegal get men behind the ball. McBrearty, by and large, was non-existent. McCaig had fairly wrapped him up. And look, it had all the signs as the game went on that you were thinking, Derry are going to take this. And, you know, Alan spoke about the goal chances they had and potential penalties. And it only takes one of them had it went in. And I don't think Donegal would have got back. But, yeah, look, it's cruel. McCaig had a great day, and, you know, on McBrearty. But big players step up on big moments, and yeah, you know, that's the beauty of a player like McBrearty. He was so good during the league, and at times he was carrying them a bit, along with Murphy at times. So, yeah, the one man that Derry didn't want on the ball at that last final kick, or, you know, it was him, and it just at his word, like, you know, it was a super score under pressure. But yeah, cruel way to lose a game, but, you know, credit where credit's due, Derry. Derry probably on the balance of the game probably deserved to win it.
I think they did.
But,
yeah.
You know, Donegal, look, they showed great determination. It was a strange game. It was very, people talk about very like an Ulster Championship game. It was nearly played by a wee bit of fear, I think, because you know, both teams were happy to get men behind the ball, and it was slow at times. It was patient. You know, they were trying to unpick each other, and there were some fantastic scores too. There were some very good long range scores. McFaul had a couple. Langan had a few as well. So, you know, there's very good glimpses of football there. But it had everything around that knockout feel, and you know, it left it for a great watch in comparison, I suppose, what we've seen to date.
Yeah, it definitely did. What do you make of Derry running down their own clock, Alan? Would you be critical of that? Like, I mean, they weren't good chances at points, but they knew McBrearty's kick. Like, they were lucky to get the chance even to continue on. And Coldrick wanted the equaliser, it was obvious. And it was McCluskey, McInnes and Glass. They had half chances. But Jesus, you have to take the half chance. Like Gallagher said after the game, I certainly hoped for it, but we couldn't get it to Shane or a couple more players. At that stage of the game, you can't try to find a shooter. Like, the clock is ticking down.
Yeah, it's difficult to know as a player exactly how long's left.
And they must have asked.
Generally, if you're on the attack, especially that close to the goal, you kind of believe the referee is going to, as long as you have the ball there, he's going to let you play away until you get a shot off. Like, they were maybe in around the 45, maybe a little bit outside, and there was a couple of half chances, but they would have been speculative efforts now to try and level. And I suppose guys, they're probably talking all week about trying to get the ball to the right place in the field before you take your shot. So if somebody has a shot from out there and it skews wide, you're saying, well, it probably wasn't on, maybe we should have tried to work it a little bit more. So I think you could see them trying to look for an opening along, but they probably just went back and forth once too often. And then David Goldrick said, we're not going to go back and forth here waiting for you to get an opportunity. He said, right, enough's enough. It was a minute and 15 seconds over, I think, so the game probably was up. But yeah, I suppose maybe if it was McGuigan or someone like that who might be renowned. But Conor Glass, maybe
Glass kicked a great one in the first half.
And it was interesting to hear I know he's only back from Australia, but his first score in the championships, like, he's some future ahead of him. He's 23, like, what a footballer, monster of a man. Kind of reminds me of some great Derry midfielders over the years, like Toole, Fergal Doherty, these sort of guys. And he looks a real footballer. And I'd say he's made a huge difference to that team, him coming in and seeing the score he kicked. Like, if he has that in his locker, coming from midfield, he's going to be a serious player for Derry over the coming years.
Would you be critical of them for not kicking it, Colm? Like, I think they recycled it four times and Coldrick went, look, you're not making any. You've turned down three half chances. You don't seem to be making any progress. I don't blame Coldrick for blowing it up there.
No, I think Coldrick done right. He did give them every opportunity, and I was just sort of sitting watching going, look, you either go for a speculative shot at that point, which Alan says, look, it's probably not a high percentage. It's like, they've probably done well. And the whole game, they'd worked the ball round and round to the right angles and got the men in the right positions for four shots. But I was screaming for somebody just to break a line or try and go for it. Like, I think Coldrick possibly, you know, he nearly wanted probably to level it up, you know, given the game that had sort of unfolded, and it sort of was unfair nearly for somebody to lose that. So in normal time, whatever. So I was screaming for somebody just to take a run at somebody, break a line, try and get in front. But look, I can't be too critical because Derry the whole day had been very patient in their build-ups and they had been able to get the right men on the ball for the shot. But at the same time, if someone had a ticket of Glass, had a ticket or whatnot, I don't think anybody would have criticised them for too heavily because, you know, they did score a few nice long range ones during the game. So look, it's a tough one to take for them. But yeah, look, I think you can't really blame David Coldrick either. The game was over and they played a wee bit over to give them that opportunity and they didn't take it. So
They could have kind of tried to buy a free maybe or something. McInnes bought a lovely free off Michael Murphy because that was not a free. Like, he grabbed his hand. That's the old school move. You know, I think that put them level. And then McBrearty obviously got the point to win it. They could have tried to do something like that. It has to be said, we're critical of Benny Herron's miss. In fairness to him, usually when you palm a goal, you palm it straight. You don't smash it down. And he was so close that he needed to smash it down. But maybe you're just so used to palming, you know, palming in a different way. He did
have a defender there as well that he had to... That he had to contend it as well a little bit, but yeah, it just needed a little bit more finesse, I think. But it was Donnelly came in along the end line with it, and like we've spoken over the last few weeks, lads hand passing the ball over the bar and stuff. In fairness to him, he had the vision to see, if I just pop this up at the back post, there's a good chance Benny Hearn is going to get his hands on this and we'll have a goal. So it was a great ball across, to be fair to him. And I think when Benny looks back at that this morning, he'll say, yeah, maybe I should have just slapped it down into the ground a little bit. Yeah, and I suppose the really good finishers, when they're in that position, they know what it needs to make sure the ball ends up in the back of the net. And don't know how many goals I saw Bernard score like that when the ball had come across, and like he just palmed it in. And like I said, I think when he looks back, he probably think he should have scored it. And like, it was a great opportunity at that stage of the game. And like, a goal in a game like that is probably worth more than 3 points, considering scores were so hard to come by.
Yeah. Well, McGuigan was robbed for a penalty too. Would we all agree on that, or do you think it's unfair? What do you think, Colin?
Yeah, look, I think it was. I think if that's anywhere else in the pitch, that's given as a free. And I obviously watched it back in the replays, and I thought it was very harshly done by. There was nearly a couple of fouls in that one play, but the very last one have nearly been pulled down by the head. Whatever, yeah. Like, to me, it looked stonewall. And like that again, that's a key moment in that game. If that's a penalty and that's put away, again, Alan talks about being more than 3 points, that gives Donegal a mountain to climb. So, they can probably feel a wee bit harsh done on that, because I felt that was, if that had been midfield or anywhere else in the pitch, that was a free.
Yeah, it didn't work very well for England last night, scoring too early. That penalty might have come a bit too early for Derry. There was a pull of the jersey and then there was a hand around the neck, which when you're running towards the goal, like, a bit of your momentum's bringing you forward, so a bit of a pull like that is definitely going to have, you know, an effect on your balance.
Yeah. It probably was a penalty, I think. Like, I watched it back a few times, and there were kind of two half fouls. He kind of pulled the hand away at the last minute, but he had tugged, and then he kind of grabbed him around the neck. So it probably was a penalty. And look, I suppose in real time it's difficult to see it, but I think when a fella gets in that close and there's a couple of guys around him, generally, especially a fella like McGuigan, he's looking for the net at that stage. So there's no reason he'd go to ground unless there's been contact made with him, and they were unfortunate not to get it. I think at that stage it was probably early enough that kind of Donegal had kind of plenty of time to get back into the game. I think the real critical one was the Heron one. That was the one that they needed to take at that stage of the game. I'd have seen them home.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Kerry weren't overly impressive, Colin, were they? Like, I mean, I don't know. I saw a lot of positivity around their performance. Peter Keane said after the game, you've no choice if there's bodies everywhere. If there's a wall up there, you just can't bazooka and blow it in. You just have to be patient and work your way towards it. I actually didn't think they were that patient. They kind of left a double sweeper there, which ruined their kick pass, instead of maybe moving somebody up on at least one of them. And because Kerry can get past one sweeper, but with two sweepers, there's no diagonal ball can beat the two sweepers. You know, I thought they were a little bit impatient, instead of maybe going like a Dublin or a Donegal, slowing the whole thing down, moving some players up in onto the double sweeper, and, you know, working scores in that manner.
Yeah, possibly. I suppose for Kerry, it was just about getting over the line. I think, like, they looked very comfortable. Okay, they had Tippett sweepers back, and, you know, didn't allow that kick pass directly into the full forward line and whatnot. But at the same time, I was watching and thinking, like, the Tipp were never going to, like, they just didn't mount any challenge, I don't think. And, like, every time Kerry wanted to play through them and wanted to inject a bit of pace, they did seem to do that, and they got their scores. So, yeah, look, you could be critical that they didn't, you know, really push on and really put two men up on them or one man up and really put them to the sword. But look, sometimes when they've been in front the whole game, sometimes when you get like that, you go into a bit of a cruise control, and it is sometimes very hard to really just go for it. And yeah, the game is never in doubt, really. And I think there's bigger tests ahead for Kerry, and, you know, I don't think they'll meet that same wall every single day they go out. Like,
No.
There's more what we've seen over the last few weeks from teams just trying to stay in it as long as they can, and that just hasn't been happening. You know, Kerry got in front and they didn't look back. They didn't look overly impressive. They didn't look like they were going to, you know, win all Ireland with that performance, but, you know, they done what they needed to do and ultimately get the job done.
Yeah, I think Kerry are going to have to figure that out, though, because there is a chance they may come up, probably not against Dublin if they meet Dublin, but before that, there's a chance they might, like, they could play Cork next week, who might play a few defenders back. They'd be probably better than Tipperary at it, so they do need to figure out how to play both ways. Like, we know Kerry want to play that lovely kicking game with the guys inside, give it into Clifford inside, but But the good teams aren't going to make it that easy for them. So at some stages during games, they're going to have to run the ball. And I think they'll probably have to run it better than they did yesterday, or they'll have to figure it out better than they did yesterday. Like as Colm said, they were probably playing within themselves yesterday. They were very comfortable. But I thought they looked a bit clueless at stages, kind of trying to break that down. They were missing Darren Moynan yesterday. Paddy Clifford played outside a little bit. I thought he did quite well. Like he's a really good foil for the other more established forwards in the full forward line and stuff, and he's willing to do a lot of that. I think every team needs a couple of guys like that are willing to sacrifice themselves for the better forwards, and he looks, as David's brother, he's probably willing to sacrifice himself a little bit, like I was for Bernard as well. He's probably willing to sacrifice himself a little bit for David.
Well, the thing about it is, what I was always say with Kerry, I don't want to labour the point, but the double sweeper, they did nothing about that. Now, if you've David Clifford on the inside line, you say, what are they doing to stop us giving it to David Clifford? That's what they want. What can we do to stop them stopping us getting it to David Clifford? Do you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I like just having two sweepers in front of him, his goal was absolutely outstanding, Colm. Like, I think that is a very maybe underrated goal, because we saw Dermot O'Connor in the second half trying a kind of outside of the right shot, and it screwed off wide. Like, to generate that much power, it wasn't as easy as it looked. But that's the thing. If a team's stopping you getting it to this man, do something to help him.
Yeah, I don't think, yeah, completely, I agree with you. Like, the goal itself for Clifford was brilliant. I think it was a serious run by Gavin White, and, you know, led off, and the finish was never in doubt. And, yeah, look, Clifford, you know, yeah, you want to get your key man on the ball a lot more. But the problem is, if you push him out the field again and try and get him on handy ball, he's not really as dangerous. So, yeah, look, Alan's right, probably they do have to figure this out, but you know, and they might come up against it maybe next week, or, you know, against Cork and whatnot. But you know, ultimately, I still think there's bigger days for Kerry. I think that when they come up against whoever it is, and later down the line, they're not going to face that. So yes, they might get Cork might flood their defence again, but I still think they're going to have enough to get by. So they definitely played within themselves. They definitely have things to work on. But I think if they get to Croke Park and spaces open up, that double sweeper is a lot harder to implement. Like we've seen it for years, where we're playing that, you know, maybe double sweeper men behind the ball, and once you get to the big wide open spaces of Croke Park, you know, there's no hiding places. So I think, yeah, while there's stuff to work on, I still, to be honest, I was fairly impressed with them in terms of their work rate, especially their forwards. You know, they were trying to turn teams high up. They were trying to turn tip over high up the pitch. They were, you know, even when they were in front, quite, and then winning the game quite easily, they were still working really hard. The guys come off the bench that, you know, are going to be able to do damage down the line. So look, not a jaw-breaking performance, but I, to be honest, was still fairly impressed by what I've seen. Yeah. But
yeah, no, I agree on the way they press high up the field, and I do. You see, Derry are pressing kickouts, and Donegal are pressing kickouts. But the minute they lose the kickout, they give up. But you still have players, so you can still turn them over after one or two hand passes. But it's like they give up and go, right, well, we put a lot of pressure on the kick out, but now let's go back. Whereas Kerry, you know, they almost want the team maybe for someone to catch it so that they can all close in on him. And Dublin do that brilliantly too. Mayo do that brilliantly. Why do the press half-heartedly? Like, what? There's two parts of the press. There's the press on trying to intercept the kick out and, you know, win it that way. But there's also the second. You have all your forwards up there. Let's try and win it if they win it.
Yeah, well, so the reason that teams don't maybe is that if the ball bypasses the forwards, then all of a sudden you only have eight or nine players back. Yeah. Whereas when you lose the kick out, a lot of teams try drop to the half forward line or out to midfield just to try and compress the field. So then to meet the defenders coming out, there, the field's a bit tighter and you can get tackles on easier. But the really good teams try and press high. So once they go after the kick out, they really go after it. And then they'll still have, they'll be that well organised that if the opposition can get the ball out past the forwards, that one of the half forwards or somebody will be dropping back, or a midfielder will be dropping back, like Dennis Bastic would have done to let Keane O'Sullivan drop off. Or yeah. So we would have worked a lot on that, trying to press high on kick outs, but kind of still being aware of what's going on behind, and if somebody breaks through, that we can get back quick, that we can get somebody free, that we can get Keane O'Sullivan free back there to act as a sweeper. But if you're playing a double sweeper, it's very difficult to do that, because you're basically taking two men out of your forward line. So But certainly I'd expect Kerry to do that when they come up against Dublin, and certainly Dublin will do it. And Colin would have lots of experience that, because they would have tried lots of different ways of pressing.
Yeah, look, the big problem we used to have, like, and again, like, you do see it even with that, you're saying Donegal and Derry as well, they're like, you wanted to press up and you really wanted to squeeze teams, but the moment you don't win that kick out, I know for Tyrone's point of view for a few years there, like, but obviously I was going back, and if I left my man too early, there was a kick pass in the midfield and that whole press, it broke down. So it's about working time and, you know, that cohesion and that forward line of going together. And Kerry seem to have it down to a nice art there. Dublin and Dublin obviously have it as well, where they're working, they're all covering for each other, while still having that mindset that if the ball bypasses, they're able to get a man back in to sort of mind the house. Because you're open. If you, like, there's times when you're maybe behind in a game and you're full court press, you're literally going for it. And some one man sleeps, or one man, you know, gets a run on you, and the ball's in behind, it's one-on-one inside. So I can see why, I suppose, Donegal and Derry maybe doing it. Kerry, I'd say that's what really impressed me with Kerry at the weekend. They were taking a bit more of a risk. They're trying to press, they're trying to get the ball turned over. And if they do, the good thing about pressing high up, obviously, is if you're in a scoring position right away, and teams aren't set up against you. So staying high up the field is probably the way teams should be going now. But I think with the knockout piece at the moment, you know, teams are, you know, I know the few games at the weekend, they're really a wee bit worried that if a goal goes in, it is a long way back, given scores are at premium.
Yeah, maybe that's it. It's just like, I mean, it's probably a little bit of a fear thing. But when they're up there, they might as well stay doing it, is kind of my point. I'll keep my, maybe a wing forward on the other side, Alan, that's not involved in that press, will sneak around, you know, and maybe be able to get back there. You use your own, probably use your own brain.
Yeah, they do. And as a forwards unit, like, we would have worked a lot over. And you can see the top teams, when the forwards are pressing, they're pressing as a unit. It's not one or two guys. You have everyone, and you're trying to force a team over onto the sideline so you can press them in that side of the
and
field.
If they close in on
back and go back over the sideline, you can see all five or six guys will all shift across to the other side. And you could actually see it in the watching Italy in the soccer last night. You could see when they press one side, all their midfielders tried to press over to kind of condense England to one side of the field. The same in the Gaelic, you're trying to force them down the sideline, set traps for them down the sideline, so that if you can get two guys to them there to try and force a turnover. And as Colm says, the higher up the field you can turn the ball over, the greater the reward is. And so it's the really brave teams that are really organised, the Kerrys, the Dublins, the Tyrones, that can turn teams over high up the field, that are going to get the best results out of it. And like, I think that's ideally the way you want to play, but it takes a lot of communication, a lot of cohesion in a forward line, and a lot of practice to get it right. So I think that's why you see teams maybe not quite ready to do it. The likes of Derry, say, maybe Rory thought, right, we're not really ready to really go after the kick out. We'll contest the first ball. If we don't win the first ball, then we need to get into our shape so we can meet Donegal coming at us around the midfield area.
Yeah, no, it's definitely interesting. There's no doubt about that. Two red cards, lads. Quinlivan red, I think we'll all agree that was a red. A little bit petulant, got pissed off, wasn't playing well, and gave a little punch. There was not much
was
in the
harsh,
punch.
Yeah,
do you think it was harsh? But look, he punched, I suppose. Yeah. Look, to be honest, he didn't hurt the player. It was just petulant and stupid. If it wasn't a red, you wouldn't really give out too much about it.
I wouldn't have given out about it at all. I saw it and I kind of watched it back a second time. I suppose if you're looking at the letter of the law, maybe you're saying, yeah, it's a red, but God, it was harsh. You could see when it happened as well, he couldn't believe that he's actually done it as well, because he's not it.
No, it's just a red mist.
Dirt in him at all. He's obviously just, maybe he hadn't been getting on as much ball as he would have liked if the game was going away from him, but he's not that sort of player at all. So
when you're playing badly and you make a mistake and someone pushes you like that, you really need to just breathe, you know what I mean? Because this is just, there's no need for it, come here you. Yeah. And you're kind of going, I think that's what Quinlivan did. The McNamee one is more interesting, Colm, in that this was stupid too, because it was right in front of the referee, but all he did was push him. Now, if he pushed him in the chest, that's not a yellow, it's not even a yellow card. He pushed him in the face. It wasn't a punch, it was a push. So I don't know what to think of this one, outside of he was purely stupid to do it, but I don't think that was a red.
Yeah, it's you see it happening throughout the games, off the ball a lot, people pushing each other and pushing in the face, and it never really gets picked up. You never see a linesman too often give it. So I think Roney was, it was fairly silly of him just to do it right in front of the referee, but I watched it and thought, look, that's fairly harsh. Now, I don't know what the letter of the law says. I don't know what the rule book says, but given what happens in a lot of games, I didn't feel that it warranted really a red. I thought that potentially, but then at the same time, if you lift your, people talk about lifting your hand once it goes up, you know, once you lift your hand at height, at someone's face, you're giving the referee an opportunity to send you off. So it was just probably a wee bit silly from his point of view. He's an aggressive type player. He likes to get into that hustle and bustle, but I would imagine that Tyrone may have been actually trying to get that overturned, like, or try and appeal it in some shape or form.
Yeah, because Joe Brawley was tweeting about this. This is from a legal perspective. He says, it's legally an assault, unwanted physical contact that is not trivial, but not in the law is it a strike. To illustrate, if Ronan had pushed his opponent in the chest with his palm instead of the face, it would not be a red. The fact it was the face is legally irrelevant. So maybe he will get off, because that would keep him out of the Donegal game, and he'd be a big loss. I want to talk quickly, we'll talk about Tyrone in part two and Donegal and Derry. I want to talk quickly about Cavan. And Pádraig Faulkner said last week before the game, if we lose to Tyrone, it's probably one of the worst years in Cavan football history. I would say the worst, because they won no championship game and they're down in the Division 4. Like, I mean, it looks like Mickey Graham is staying with them anyways, because he says, we'll regroup, we'll reflect and review, and we'll look at a lot of things we didn't do right over the course of the year, etc, etc. So he's definitely staying with them. I don't think there should be pressure on Mickey Graham. It's just interesting, like, following up a good win the next year. Like, I mean, how can it go so wrong? I suppose for Tipperary, and like, Tipperary never expected it, but they were relegated as well. How can it go so wrong like that, Alan?
Yeah, I'd say it's difficult for Mickey Graham to put his finger on exactly where this has gone so wrong. And I suppose we spoke last week about how, when things aren't going well, what do you look at? All you can go back is, you can look at, I'm sure their preparation was okay, I'm sure they were happy with their preparation. So all you can do is look at the games in itself and have a look at the KPIs or the stats you're trying to hit, and what areas of the field are we losing these matches in. And I think, like we said a few weeks ago, Cavan they probably came from nowhere to win the Ulster Championship last year as well, so they're probably not as good as maybe what they looked last year,
but
they're
not
as bad.
Yeah,
they're definitely not as bad as what we've seen from them this year. And I think it was Kieran Wheeler said in the Sunday game, it looked like the first half that they were ready to pack up and go home. They just had enough of it this year, and I think they kind of played like the a little bit like that as well. They there was no danger of them really, really winning that game at any stage. And I thought they made it easy for Tyrone. And they'd be happy enough just to get this year done. We'll go back to the drawing board and have a look and go back hard at it next year. And we said, look, maybe it's difficult after the effort they put in maybe over the last couple of years to win an Ulster Championship, to go back to the well again for those guys. That's probably the pinnacle of their careers, if we're being honest about it, last year. So to go back to the well again, it's a bit like us winning the All-Ireland in 2011. Like, you come out in 2012 and you're just not at the same pitch. No matter what you do, you just can't get back to the same pitch. You just can't get the same hunger. And you fall short, same as happened to us in 2012. And it could just be as simple as that. Maybe they just need a break now for a few months and come back again.
And that's a big thing. But also, the manager the year after, unless you're Jim Gavin and you have no feelings whatsoever, the manager is very loyal to the lads who won him that All-Ireland. Like, say, Gilroy, for example. Pat, like, he probably wouldn't want to change that team too much. You've got me over the line. Yeah. I love you guys.
Yeah, well, I think, and you're always willing to give lads a year. Like, they've done it for me last year. I'll give them a year to prove, can they do it again? And it's very difficult maybe to get rid of guys the year after. Whereas when the year doesn't go well, say for Cavan this year, now Mickey Graham can make some decisions. Okay, you did well for me last year, but you haven't done it this year, so I need to make some changes here. So there could be a bit of that as well. So there could be lots of reasons, but I think he'd be happy. And I think he's right to stay on. Like, he did a great job with them last year. Look, it hasn't gone well this year, but he can get them back to the drawing board and I'm sure they'll be fine next year.
Yeah. Thomas Galligan's always an interesting one, isn't it, Colm? Like, I mean, why put him full forward when you're not going to kick him the bloody ball? Isn't it such a waste?
Yeah, look, I thought it was a fairly strange one having him in there. And especially, like, Tyrone were never going to let that be just, man on man inside. And, I just knew that whenever he went in, it actually suited us. That was going to work. Having him out around the middle, probably, like, he's a fantastic player. He can win ball. He can carry at speed. He's so many good attributes. Having him in there definitely wasn't in my eyes when I seen it. I was thinking this will play right into our hands, and it sort of did in a way. So like, a strange one, but I can see what they're at. I suppose the advanced mark, they were thinking probably if we can get a few marks in here with him, there's scores to be had. But it just didn't work out the way they planned it. So yeah, look, at Cavan are just gonna have to regroup after this game. Alan talked about there, when you have a good year, nothing changes, and when you have a bad year, the whole thing changes, and that's typically the way it is. Like, Tyrone done it, we done it, I've seen it through my career, where you know, you get an All-Ireland final or you win something, win an Ulster title, and maybe you get nipped and everything's good, you're sort of positive, and the manager doesn't want to change too much up. You've no real youth coming in. While if you lose a game early in the championship, I've seen us getting back to trials early doors and maybe 10, 12 boys being brought in. And that sometimes is needed regardless of you win or lose. The margins are so tight in this game where, you know, you win by a point and you're the best, in the world, nothing changes. You lose by a point, everything's, you know, that's reset. So it's a fine margin game. And I think Mickey will just have to regroup. And as I said, you could probably see wholesale changes next year in Cavan, you know, with guys coming in and out and, you know, team changes and whatnot. And that's sometimes what you just have to do. But you can't blame him for what he's done with the positive season had last year, winning Ulster title. And as I said, Alan said, coming from absolutely nowhere, I don't think anybody would have picked them last year. So look, they've just got to regroup them, game on their hands going forward, and look, and maybe do them no harm in the long term.
I think it's an interesting point about no changes. Like you mentioned Jim Gavin, like, no matter what happened the previous year when Jim was in charge, no one felt safe going into the following year. And he always brought at least one or two young guys through every year. And that was on purpose. Like, he went looking to try and get two guys through so we could keep the thing fresh, could keep guys on their toes. And it's easy to do when you're Jim Gavin and you're kind of winning All-Ireland with Dublin.
And you've a lot of talent coming through.
Obviously, you mightn't have the, obviously don't have the strength and depth in other countries. But it was Jim Gavin did that on purpose to keep guys on their toes, to keep guys who are establishing the team. There's no one safe here unless you're performing day in, day out. I've guys coming in behind us here to put into the team. So it's just an interesting point.
No, it definitely is. And Brian Cody did something similar with Kilkenny when they were going. He'd always bring one or two to make sure everybody wasn't safe. There's not much to say about the Leitrim game. It's lousy on poor Leitrim, like a Division 4 team. I'd say when a lot of the Leitrim players saw the draw against Mayo, a knockout game, like, what are you going to be thinking? He says, here, look, I'm not entertained. Like, I don't think they didn't have everybody. That's understandable. They couldn't even sell the tickets. This is Mayo, absolutely football mad county. 3,500 in McHale Park, and they were left 1,000 short. So only 2,500 at it. Would you pay £30 to go to that and wear a mask the whole way outside through and just sitting in the stand? And apparently you're being watched very closely. Like, I don't know. In Ireland, there's no real laws to wear masks outside. In Spain, there is. I was over there. But I don't know why you have to wear a mask at a bloody GAA match outdoors if you can walk down the street without a mask. It doesn't make any sense. Maybe that's turning people off. Who knows? But I would say the mask is probably down the list of the reasons. The hammering that was expected, and, you know, I suppose the 30 euros to watch it, and it's on television. It's probably understandable, even though Mayo are completely crazy support-wise, Alan.
Yeah, and it wouldn't be a match that you would have been that quick to turn on, to be honest with you. But I think, and it's easy, like, we talk about Derry and Donegal, and yeah, we have a championship now, but it's like, it's easy to forget what's gone on in the few weeks before. It's easy, it can be easy to gloss over what happened to Leitrim yesterday, and it just re-emphasises, like, the need for change with the whole championship, because it's just, and I've said before, if I was in charge of Leitrim, I was playing with Leitrim, what's important now is the league. Forget about the championship. Like, if you were playing for Leitrim, I know guys can't go to the States, whatever, this summer, but would a championship now stop you going, that you could play for Leitrim in the championship, stop you going to this? Nothing would have stopped you going to the States anyway, so I'm asking the wrong man the question. But like, kind of playing for Leitrim in the championship now wouldn't stop you going, why would you stay at home from the States or miss a summer that you could head away in a J1 or whatever? Yeah. Like, play the National League, try get up to Division 3, but after that, like, that should be the goal, because the championship at this stage, and the gap's just getting wider and wider. Like, it's not getting closer, it's not getting wider and wider. The gap between the teams is getting bigger because of the preparation, the time guys are putting in, and it is a real problem. And I presume it will be looked at this year because it's being looked at at
Special Congress. This is why I get a little bit frustrated when I see this happening, and for years I used to be tearing my hair out when you'd see these lopsided results, especially, you know, mostly we're getting them in Leinster, now you're getting them in all the provinces. Is, you know, when is this going to change? And finally, John Horan, to be fair to him, you know, he set up a committee to come up with new championship structures. There's two new ones, and there is the status quo. There's three options at Special Congress. They're going to debate it. So it's going to be a league-based Championship, some messing with the provincials where you make 4/8, so you have to move counties around, I don't know, and then keep it as it is. So my hope is that all this debate is going to end, they'll change the championship at special congress, and we won't have to worry about this anymore. So I've spent too many shows, I was going to talk about get rid of the provincials, but sure, like, I mean, there's a good chance that it'll happen anyway, so I don't want to get into it, because there's much more interesting conversation to be had here, Colm. So on the BBC coverage, I was watching your brother on RTE, and then I remember tweeting that Pat Splann looked like he wanted to go to the toilet. He was kind of dancing on the spot, and so a few different lads on Twitter told me, get over to the BBC, it's all kicking off. So I didn't get to see the actual row, but I saw a transcript of it, and it was between Mickey Hart and Ushi McConville. So I'll read it out to you. Starting with Mickey Hart here, I just want to pick up on something that Ushin said at the start. He described this game as defensive, and that's doing it a disservice. Now here we go, right? The minute Mickey Hart hears defensive, he starts getting on the offensive. So McConville says, I didn't say it was defensive. Hart said, oh, you did. And you said there's a lot of defensive football being played here. McConville said, no, I said they were getting bodies back. That doesn't mean defensive football. Hart, no, I'm sorry, you used the words defensive. McConville, no, I didn't. Getting a little bit petulant here now. Then Mickey Hart, you did. You just check it out there. He was looking at the cameraman then to get it checked out. That's what's happening around the game. People talk about being negative. They talk about being defensive, and they talk about blankets and all sorts of stuff. McConville, when I said that, I was praising Derry. I was praising them for getting those bodies back. Mickey Hart, that's right. I'm just telling you to mind the language, because there's better... because it's better to say that it's quality football and the defenders are the people playing well with real skill here today, more than the forwards. Like, I don't know, Colm. I've interviewed Mickey Hart enough times to know that he has a serious bee in his bonnet about that word defensive football. And, well, like, who does he think he is telling Ushi McConville to mind his language, though? That's definitely another part of it.
Yeah, look, I'd read about this afterwards. I didn't see it in live time. But, look, yeah, Mickey never liked the word defensive over the years. I suppose we in Tyrone had been sort of branded with that brush of, you know, defensive and, you know, negative puke football, call it what you will. So definitely one thing that would probably set him off would have been that. I'm not sure of the difference between defensive football and getting a lot of bodies back, because it's pretty similar in what they're trying to talk about. They're talking about the same thing, really. But it's just probably the way Oisin had sort of put it across of defensive. But look, yeah, like Mickey, I say, has had that branded, like there's a lot of media coverage over Tyrone over the last number of years with that sort of them titles around defensive and negative football. And he didn't like it. And, you know, to be fair to him, he always had an answer for, you know, to us as a group of, you know, why we were playing good football. It was okay. As Oisin said, bodies back and a lot of men behind the ball. But Mickey did see it as good in the way that we were racking up scores and racking up, you know, good score lines against teams. And, you know, he nearly called it, nearly in a way, a good attacking approach, because, you know, we were scoring. So what more do you want? And in a way, you know, that game of the weekend as well, like it did have a lot of men back, or defensive football, call it what you will, but it was still enjoyable to watch. I think, you know, if you look at the flip side of what we've seen today in the championship around teams beating teams by 10, 12, 14, 20 points, whatever it is, you know, that to me was a breath of fresh air. But back years ago, probably when we were playing, I remember playing Donegal a few times, and like especially the Ulster final in 16 possibly, where the score was 10, it was 11-10 or whatever it was, and there was a lot of bodies back in defensive football. So Mickey's had this probably in his head for the last number of years, that Tyrone especially have been tarnished with this defensive style football. So for Oisin's probably just unlucky one day on picket at a game they got there where he's been the one to set him off. So look, I don't know the difference between what they're both talking about the same thing in a way. It's just the way they've brought it across.
Yeah, I remember interviewing him the time Sean pulled down McManus. I was working for Off the Ball as a sideline reporter, and I was talking to Mickey after the game, and I made the mistake. And what about the pull down there with Sean Kavanagh? Oh, he lit on me, so he did. Yeah. I think Darren O'Shea and David Brady were up in the co-com, and they were in the stitches laughing. Like, I mean, he could be scary enough when he wants to turn on you like that. So I'd say Oisin went on the back foot, and I don't. Oisin Sheehan had nothing to be on the back foot about. The analysis there is it was a defensive game. What the hell is wrong with that? There's nothing offensive about saying that. We'll come back in part two and we'll maybe do a little bit of analysis on how it was an enjoyable defensive game. All right, so Donegal, 16 points, Derry, 15 points. And like we were talking just at the end of part one there about it being an offensive game, it was absolutely a defensive game. But why was it so enjoyable? Because both teams attacked with everyone and they defended with everyone. So it was like a 14-on-14 at one end, 14-on-14 at the other end. Now, obviously, McBrearty was staying back. McGuigan was trying to stay back, but I think McManam was attacking and he ended up in the defence as well, Alan. But, like, I mean, when Colm talked about the 5 years ago defensive game versus a defensive game now, the very obvious difference, like with me, is the Rory Gallagher teams of the past wouldn't send all their players into attack. They leave the double sweeper back. It's they're probably attacking, you know, with maybe 8 versus 12. You know, players are doubling up, the turnover happens, then a counterattack. You don't see that as much now because it's everyone has every man has a man up in the attacking sense. There's loads of bodies there, but it's not as horrible to watch. And one thing I thought was very obvious with Derry yesterday, they have everybody back, but when they win the ball, if they win the ball back, they're not looking to counter. They'll slow it right down and you see McGuigan and you see a few of their forwards tearing back up the field to get a little bit of their shape back, and now they start their attack. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's obvious, it's nothing like... Mickey Hart needs to relax and say a defensive game now in my head, and I used to be critical of the 5 years ago games, a defensive game now isn't that this horrible, boring game where you're, you know, a Monaghan-Fermanagh game, you know, these kind of games. They're grand now, and stop getting offended by a defensive game, because the great thing is we've lots of attacking games now, and throw in one of them good intense defensive games, I've no problem with that.
Yeah, well, I think you're right, Woody. Like when I would have started playing or we would have started playing, when you're working on defence, it was nearly very much the six backs and the two midfielders would work on defence and the eight forwards would work on forward play, whereas now it's teams prepare for how they're going to defend as a unit of 15 and they prepare for how they're going to attack as a unit of 15. So, like, if you think back to, say, Donegal in 2011 or a couple of Rory's teams after that, even a couple of Mickey Hart's teams as well, they weren't willing to commit. Like, they wanted to defend. Once they turned the ball over, they weren't willing to commit men forward. Whereas Mickey changed a little bit, to be fair to him, and he started to commit men to the forward line because they needed to get more scores. Rory's obviously done it as well. He's figured out how to set up a team defensively, but when we win the ball, we want to commit men to into the attack so we can score. So it's changed from 5 or 10 years ago. And like, every team plays like that now. There's no, like, what's an attack-minded team now? Is it somebody that leaves their six forwards up? Like, there's no team leave their six forwards up all the time. So everyone is playing this, like, the game has evolved and everyone is playing, when they don't have the ball, the 15 players are defenders. And when they have the ball, probably 12 or 13 players are attackers and cornerbacks can go, the good team wing backs can go. So it's very much evolved into, when you lose the ball, you're a defensive unit. When you have the ball, you're an offensive unit. And that's the way the game is now. It's not like it was 10 years ago when we would leave 4 or 5 forwards up. We just nearly wouldn't bother defending, leave that to the two midfielders and the six backs.
I'd like to see that the odd time, only they can't stay up because their men attack, you suppose. When it's all attack and all defend, you know, it's probably difficult. I do think the more attacking teams will try to leave three up and they will stay up unless their man heads on. Now maybe Dublin turn around and they're dropping maybe to the half forward line.
They will drop down, and like I think Mickey has a point, like, when he talks, like I can see what he's trying to say. That there's an art and a skill in how a team defend as well, and if that means 15 men end up behind the ball because they're trying to stop a score, then so be it. That's everyone doing their job for the team. But when they turn it over, they got to commit men to the attack. And we saw that yesterday when they had that, and you said Shane McGuigan trying to get back up to get a bit of shape, to get a bit of stretch back in the field, so that if they want to give a kick pass, they could give a kick pass in. So the game has evolved, and I think that's the way the game is now. Everyone's going to defend as a unit and everyone's going to attack as a unit.
How do you see it, Colm?
Yeah, similar. And I think Mickey used to speak an awful lot, just when we're talking about Mickey, used to speak an awful lot around football players. He nearly didn't refer to us as defenders, attackers, midfielders. You know, he sort of was always hammering home to us that we all needed to be able to do everything. So we all needed to be able to score. We all needed to be able to defend. We all needed, you know what I mean? So, like, the game has evolved. There's absolutely no doubt. You know, it's in an ideal world, you'll want to put all your men up top, and you know, all this lovely fancy, you know, kick passing in. And there will be days where that will happen. I think, you know, as the championship goes on, there will be, you know, once you start getting to Croke Park, there is more opportunity to kick the pot. Like, I didn't think it was very, like, Donegal Derry at the weekend, while it was such a great game to watch, I felt, I'm not sure how many kick passes there was direct in the, you know, in the full forward line, very, very little. So I do think the game's moved on. Nearly the way people are defending at the moment is slightly different. Like, we used to get back in a pack as such. We nearly used to set up like a, you know, a 3-2-1, whatever. Like, you weren't really responsible for a man. You were just trying to close that middle out. A lot of teams now are getting back. Okay, they're getting back in a shape, but as soon as the opposition men start coming in, they start picking them up again. So
yeah, they move out on them.
You move out on them. There used to be a lot of men. Like I said, we never marked a man. We were literally just shuffling, a bit like Italy and England. You were shuffling left to right, and you know, just trying to cut out space. And that sometimes worked very well, but teams obviously doubling, like I said, doubling not worked that out. But now the game has shifted a wee bit in that defensive piece, where once the opposition gets in, you're responsible for a man. So it nearly goes back to man on man defend. And that's where technically, I was watching Kerry and Tip, obviously, and I felt Tipperary were very naive, and their skill, you know, the way they were defending, they're technically weren't great defenders in that, and Kerry were able to cut through them. So I think and that's why games are probably a bit more enjoyable to watch, because there is a lot more man on man. Yes, there's 14 or 15 back, but suddenly coming down, if you get it one on one with your man, you're able to go past them and maybe, you know, unlock a score. While back in the day, a few years back, it was, you know, you could buy one man and you're just automatically met with two or three, and the ball's shuffled back out and back around, and it's very laboured and lateral. So it has moved on, and there's definitely, it's definitely more enjoyable to watch, I think. From, you know, obviously it was difficult for me back because I was still playing. I thought it was great as long as we won, but you know, looking back now, I think things have definitely moved on in the right direction.
Yeah, no, like, obviously a criticism of Tipperary leaving the two double sweepers, which you don't see anymore, is that they didn't push out on the likes of Thomas Sullivan, who was able to kick 2 points, and most of the good teams won't allow that. But in Tipperary's defence, they probably said, double sweeper, keep Clifford out of it, versus maybe giving Tom Sullivan a shot. So, you know, I wouldn't criticise Tipperary for that, for those tactics either. Like, I mean, it was a great game. Niall O'Donnell came into it really, really well. Derry started the game well. Donegal took over. Second half, Derry started really well. And Donegal kind of... And Niall O'Donnell was a big part of how Donegal got back into the game. And tactically, I thought it was interesting. McInnes was dropping off him, and nobody seemed to be picking him up. And Gallagher had to bring on a sub, number 18, McCluskey, to actually man-mark O'Donnell. You could hear Gallagher the whole way through the game. And on the sideline, he was like an extra sideline reporter or something like that. But he was shouting at your man, stay on O'Donnell, stay on O'Donnell. You know, because he was coming into the game strongly, Alan, at that point.
Yeah, he's a good playmaker, and he linked it up very well, kicked a couple of good scores. And I think Colin referred earlier on, some of the score taking in the game was exceptional from both sides. And like, there obviously wasn't a lot of space in forwards line, in either forward line. The guys were under pressure kicking, like McFaul kicked a couple of great scores under pressure.
He kicked three sensational scores. And I was thinking that, what's this lad good at? Because he played in the full forward line, and I think he doesn't have any danger in there. Then now he's a working half forward. So if he can marry the working half forward with those bloody scores, like, you could have a really good number 12 there.
Yeah, I was actually thinking myself this morning, is he, when I was coming in, I was having to think about it. I was like, is he renowned for this? Does he do this week in, without? And he probably doesn't kick scores like that week in, without. Colin probably knows him a bit better, but if you can add that to his game now, and Conor Glass kicked an exceptional score, Langan kicked a couple of great scores, obviously McBrearty's won in the end, so it was a game of the highest quality. And call it defensive, call it what you want, it was intense. Everyone wanted to win, everyone was tackling hard, everyone attacked hard. It was a great game, and some of the score taking was probably the highlight of it.
Yeah, but the key for me for this, like, was watching, you were watching Donegal, and you think of what we spoke around the last number of weeks with Donegal was their key men, of McHugh, McBrearty and Murphy. You know, Murphy obviously didn't start, but steadied the ship when he came in. McBrearty was, you know, was marked out of it for the full game, really, bar the last. And McHugh, I didn't think had very much of an influence in the game either. So
no.
Derry got their tactical side of things spot on. Like, and, you know, when Niall O'Donnell obviously started to take over, you could hear Gallagher get somebody on him. So Derry done everything right in this game. And, you know, I say they're probably very unlucky not to come through it. Donegal, from their side, you know, it's still a sign of a good team, which worries me a wee bit because their big players didn't perform. They were taken out of the game and they still end up winning. So, you know, I don't know where that leaves them going forward. But, you know, Tyrone will have to, you know, normally you go, if Tyrone are sort of looking at this going, can we stop them big men? You know, the Ned O'Donnells, Langans and whatnot, they're still able to chip on scores. And, you know, it shows a good strength and depth for Donegal in terms of what they have.
Michael Langan's ability to generate power from a standing position is just incredible, isn't it? Like, there's no run-up. He can actually just get a ball just without even taking a step and just stroke it over the bar, Alan.
Yeah, no, it's an amazing skill, yeah. And like, you see it every now and again from guys, but it is very difficult to have a standing start.
Really difficult.
To kind of get the height and the distance he does. And he's a real threat, like, to score. He's great pace as well. Like, he's a really good footballer. McNeilish came on as well, who probably hasn't featured much over the last couple of years. Like, he's a brilliant footballer as well, so they'll expect a bit more from him. But I think, just come back to, like, the Collins point, where are Donegal at? I think the best preparation for any game is a tight game the week before or the couple of weeks before. So Donegal will get huge learnings out of that game. Like, in a close game like that, obviously it showed up a few weaknesses they have, showed up a few cracks that now they can now spend the next couple of weeks kind of going over and making sure they're fixed for an Ulster semi-final, whereas the likes of Tyrone maybe had an easier game. Some of those cracks mightn't show up until it's too late. So I always found, from my own experience, that the tighter the games in the lead into the next round or whatever, or the lead into an All-Ireland series, the better, because you start to see things or you start to see issues you may have. So I think that game will really stand to Donegal going into the Ulster semi-final now.
I think it will. When you look at it, the whole way through that game, Colm, you're thinking this is Derry's day, because, like I said, their points they were scoring were spectacular. They had goal chances. You know, they looked like the better team, if we're being honest, for most of the game. And Declan Bonner said after the game, he said, this team would have been questioned in terms of character down through the years. Yeah, Donegal can play football, but when it comes to the crunch, maybe we don't get over the line. But we got over the line in a very tight game there today. And like the points you're making, none of the, like, not too many of the Donegal players, you know, played that well. That is a game Donegal could easily have lost. When you look at the Cavan game last year, is this a Donegal team now that has grown a little bit more, have come through that tight game that they might have lost?
Yeah, possibly. You know, I didn't see how Donegal were going to come through. Derry had everything right in their matchups. One thing that impressed me about Derry was their fitness levels and their aggression. You know, every time Donegal got the ball, Derry were looking for double ups and trying to dispossess. They just had a serious work rate, and their scores they were taking, everything just seemed to marry up for a Derry win. And Donegal's key men weren't playing. You know, they were marked out of it. I genuinely was sort of shocked at the end. Now, Donegal, you have to give Donegal serious credit, because it's very hard to fix when you're playing like that and you're very laboured. And I thought they were very slow and laboured at times. And you think, how are we going to change this? It's very, very hard to change and sort of just flip. You can't just flip a switch. And Alan talked about fixing things. They will now. They've come through a hard match. They've come through a game that they probably shouldn't have won. And it'll definitely stand them. And like, they're probably, you know, obviously last year losing to Cavan has they're a year further on. And the guys have sort of stepped up. The guys that you wouldn't, well, Bar McBrady, you know, the guys that probably weren't renowned for taking the game to the scruff of the neck did it at the weekend. So they're definitely in a good enough place. But I watched, like, if they play like that against Tyrone, I don't see how they come through. Because, but again, we don't know what's going to the Tyrone game, I'm sure. I'm not sure where they're at either. So it's definitely positive from a Donegal point of view in terms of getting over the line. But there was an awful lot of things that they didn't do very well at the weekend.
Well, I'll stay with you with Tyrone then. So what are the positives with Tyrone? The obvious one is Cathal McShane's back, scored 3 points, you know, led one or two spill off his chest. But look the danger that we know he is. Conn Fitzpatrick, where did you pull this fella out of? I like the look of this lad. He has a bit of go in him. He's able to get up. And you were struggling for midfielders since you retired. Why have we not seen this lad before?
I've been harping on for the last number of weeks at home, going, why? I can't understand it, because I marked him a couple of years back in the club, in a club championship game, and he absolutely destroyed me. And he then went on, we ended up putting a man marker on him, and he destroyed him too. And I remember just thinking, Jesus, lads, like, he can catch, serious pace, he can score. I think the question marks around Colin has been probably is, can he defend? Can he go back and help out in that sort of defensive duty? And that's been, you know, I think that's why Tyrone probably haven't played him to date. But from the sound bites coming out of the camp over the last number of weeks, that he was playing fairly well in house, and like he had a super game at the weekend. I felt that having big Brian Kennedy come in as well was a, like, the two of them nearly worked really well together. Brian would be more renowned for, I know he scored a goal, but he's normally renowned for his tackling, you know, his ability in the air and whatnot. And them two guys are interesting because, you know, they could form a fairly formidable partnership if they get it right. And obviously, look, there's going to be bigger days next week, you know, against Donegal. It's going to be a massive step up in class. So that'll tell them where the midfielders are at. McCurry, obviously, look, I'm not sure, like, one of the best performances I've seen from him. You know, we just done everything right. And a very, very positive. You've got McShane coming back. You know, yeah, scored a good point. Let a few bounce off him, but massive to have him back. Tyrone had no McKenna at the weekend as well. So, you know, he's to come back in.
What's wrong with him?
You know, Callum? There's a lot of... I genuinely don't know. I have a lad working with us. He's on the panel, Ben McDonald, who actually came on at the weekend there. But they're not letting anything, out in the open, even to me. So I genuinely don't know what... You know, there was rumours around Tyrone that he picked up an injury in a game. There was the usual, like, there was COVID-ish rumours. There was a whole raft of things going ahead. So I genuinely don't know why McKenna wasn't playing the weekend. But if he gets back, and look, you're bringing boys off the bench at the minute. Like Mark Bradley came on at the weekend. There's a couple other lads there that I know that can come in and do a bit of damage. So from a forward point of view, Tyrone are in a really positive position. The midfield, which would have been their sort of worry at the start of the year, they were sort of chopping and changing, didn't know who was coming in and out or who was going to be best placed. So maybe they've unearthed a good partnership in them two boys. And defensively, that's where I suppose that, you know, they'd be happier that defensively the way they played at the weekend. But I think trying to get McNamee back for it would be for the next game. It's going to be vitally important for them.
Yeah, no, it definitely. One, like, McCurry is obviously outstanding. We'll talk about him in a minute. And the supply of ball into him was absolutely outstanding as well. Like, I mean, it's one thing having a lad in there, but you have to try and find him. Like, Donnelly found him a lovely ball. Hart with a lovely ball. McKiernan from cornerback found him with a few balls as well. And it was very obvious that this was a Tyrone tactic, and he was moving brilliantly. And it was get it far as we can up the field, and then look for him. It was a very obvious gameplay, which might have been a bit too obvious for Donegal, because they'll obviously have a plan for it next week. But McShane throws that in, you know, throws another little angle in on that as well for Donegal to think about. The midfield looks good with Kennedy and Fitzpatrick. They need that against the bigger teams to have a bit of physicality and size out there. I don't know, like, without Tyrone blowing, I like Sludden. Sludden's a lovely, industrious player as that third midfielder. The one thing, problem I would have is you're playing Sludden as that third midfielder, buzzing around and maybe helping out at the back and stuff. You're leaving two inside. Where does Paul Donaghy fit in? Because, like, he has to play, he looks like a fish out of water because he's running around doing too much feckin' work around. He's a finisher, like, I mean, but does he fit in there beside McCurry and McShane, Alan?
Yeah, it's difficult to play three inside fours like that. Like, he did very well in a couple of league matches at wing forward, I think, and then we saw him in a full forward yesterday. But, like, he's a lovely finisher, so I think it's important to find a spot from somewhere. You do need, like, you need guys coming off the bench too that can finish and have the ability to score. But you can see McCurry at the weekend. He looks like he's relishing the way Tyrone are playing now. He's probably had a frustrating few years in terms of playing as a full forward in a team like Tyrone that maybe tend to run the ball a lot, or even in the modern game playing as a corner forward, you don't tend to get a lot of kick passes in now because of the way teams are defending against you. So he got plenty of supply yesterday, and you could see the damage himself and McShane did when they got decent supply. And, like, for me, McCurry, and I've obviously watched him for a few years, like, he's so much talent, but he hasn't maybe always delivered for Tyrone based on the talent he has, and kind of seeing him winning the ball over his head, Jesse. I'd never really seen
twice
that level.
He let one of them drop, the second one drop, but twice
yeah,
over
but
his dropped. Head.
I'd never really seen that kind of level of going for the ball, that kind of level of aggression in him before. So maybe this new management team, in terms of the way they're playing, looking to kick it a bit more, will give him a new lease of life. And I think, like, if you think of the top fours in the country, like, at the moment, he's probably a little echelon below that, but he probably has the talent to get up there. So it'll be interesting to see over when he comes up against maybe better teams the next couple of games, if Tyrone managed to win a couple of games, how he fares playing like that, or playing like that with with a supply like that inside in Croke Park, when he has a little bit more space maybe to take on teams, and Colin would know him better. He's like, he has a lot of talent, but for me, he just needs to, he needs to do that against one of the top teams to kind of move up a level in terms of forwards and to, where he stands against other forwards in the country. But he certainly looks like he's in good form coming into the Ulster semi-final.
Yeah, he definitely does. What do you make of Donaghy's role out in the top of the D? Is he spending a lot of time chasing lads, Colm, you know, rather than being close to goal for a shot? And then when he gets the odd shot, he's forcing it then, because in his head, I'm sure he wants to get on the scoreboard. And maybe he's taken on, he took one off the left, which was a bit too far out and missed it. You know, he seems a little bit confused with his role within the team. Is that fair, or...?
Possibly. Like, Donaghy's a finisher. He's not a guy that's going to track back in the half back line and willingly and put in massive tackles and that. So, like, yeah, he was probably a wee bit frustrated the weekend. He was, you say, he was chasing an awful lot. He probably wasn't, you know, getting into the angles where he wanted to be to shoot. And like I said, that's what he is. He's a guy, and he's a guy that gets the ball. And as soon as he gets the ball, he's looking a shot. He's not even thinking about anything else, you know. Yeah, he is a finisher. He can kick off both feet. That's why he's so dangerous.
In that system then, that Tyrone, if they're going two inside, it almost has to be Donaghy or McCurry to go beside McShane, and you have to make that hard call.
Yeah, like, possibly, and McCurry probably would be better. And like, knowing the way Darren plays, he could play in the half forward end. It wouldn't be an issue because he's got massive fitness levels. He's probably one of the fittest in that Tyrone team. So, but at the same time, I'm not sure he would want. I think under Mickey, he did play it in half forward line, and he was tracking back and was sort of, you know, he was able to get up and down, you know. But the big thing with McCurry at the moment is he's scoring, and he's scoring heavily. So I don't see how you can move him out, or, you know, keep him. You know, you don't want him running back and trying to defend. You want him up front, being fresh, making them runs, especially the way Tyrone are playing with the kick pass in. You know, it's obviously, they have worked on it the last couple of years. They're trying to, like, the likes of Richie Donnelly is a fantastic kick passer. He found one at the weekend. You want to keep Darren up close to goals because he can't finish. Now, the one thing that, for me, for him, of what McCurry needs to do is, he's always been that guy on the loop. He can, you know, we can take the ball, get it on the loop, kick it over. The big thing is playing against better teams is, you're not going to get the space to do that. So there's going to be a point in time where he's going to have to start beating men one-on-one, go past them. A bit like Colin McCallaghan or whatnot, Clifford, whatever it is, them guys are getting, they can shoot in the loop, but at the same time, they can ultimately get a ball, take a man on one-on-one, go past them and score. And that's where the acid test will be for Darren, because, you know, there's no problems with him shooting. He can shoot off both right and left. It's whether he can start going against the top teams and go a bit more direct. So Donaghy, I'm not sure how to piece him together, because he is, again, he's an out-and-out finisher.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, Conor McKenna to come back in. Tyrone, there's no doubt, when you look at the Tyrone bench and you see Tiernan McCann came on, Kennedy came on, Mark Bradley came on, McShane came on, Burns came on, and then you're leaving Conor McKenna out of that. Like, I mean, they have some serious options now. There's no doubt about that. And if you're going to start with a midfield of Kennedy and Kilpatrick, then you've got loads of options for your forward line. Even though, if Matty Donnelly, I'll say it again, he definitely looks to be a little bit off the pace, and it didn't work on the inside forward line for him. So where to play him will be another. But they have loads of options. But performance of the weekend, as we don't have time to do a separate section of it, but I'm going to give you the nominations anyway. So obviously, McFaul from Derry was outstanding. What I loved about his second point was how he tripped up Bon Gallagher. You know, as you're a lad's chasing you and you just put your foot to the side, trip him up. It was a great old move of Kieran MacDonald with Mayo. He'd always put a foot across and the defender would trip up and you'd have a free shot at goals. He was outstanding, like we mentioned already. Niall O'Donnell, 3 from play, was absolutely outstanding. Darren McCurry is the obvious one, 5 from play. Four different men marking him. That's like, you'd be probably entitled to just put a sweeper in front of him altogether rather than try 4 different men. I think that's a little bit embarrassing. Ryan O'Donoghue scored 1-6. You know, whether he got a nice little goal in on the near post, but like, I mean, he's probably lucky to make that shortlist considering, you know, who they were playing against. Paddy Clifford, very industrious, wasteful in front of goal, but very industrious the other night. The performance of the weekend has to be Chrissy McCaig, lads. We criticised here on the show loads of times the man marking's gone out of the game. They can't do it anymore. And he gave an exhibition of man marking. He didn't care about the play. He's a leader. He just sacrificed his own game. And we could see him when he got the yellow card off camera. Now, it's illegal what he was doing, but he was pissing McBrearty off. He was turned and faced McBrearty and wouldn't let McBrearty pass by him. He was like shadowing him. McBrearty's just throwing his hands up. I think that was at the stage where the linesman told the referee to mark McCaig. But in the modern game, Alan, cornerback dogs are not dead. Sean Marty Lockhart would have looked at that and he would have given Chrissy McCaig a hug after the game.
Yeah, well, yeah, funny you mentioned Sean Marty. When I get asked who's the best defender I ever marked, Sean Marty is actually the answer. I marked
really?
Him once in the qualifier game and I played with Ireland and he was exceptional. But like, I'm not surprised with Chrissy McCaig. Like, he's been a top back in what's been a poor Derry team maybe for a few years before this, but he's an exceptional footballer, and he's willing to fit. But he can come out and play. If he was put out number six and he was asked to play, he can play as well. He can get up, he can kick a score. So he really is. And you talk about old school defending, like, there is not many cornerbacks left like that. But he was obviously asked to do a job and he did it to perfection, bar, and he'd be pissed off with the last one as well. I'd say that he didn't manage to get some sort of check or get onto McBrearty's right foot, because if he or onto McBrearty's left foot for the last one, he just kind of got caught on the wrong side.
Yeah.
If he marks McBrearty's left foot from there, he's not scoring with his right if he forced him back. So it was the only kind of time he nearly got away from the whole day. But like, I'm not surprised by it. He's an exceptional defender and has been for a long time.
Yeah, and he was centre back for the last couple of years, but the move into the corner back has just, you know, made a man marker out of him again. He used to play there. I remember he marked Dear McConnelly in an All Ireland club semi final, and we were analysing before the game, how is he going to approach this? What did Chrissy do? He went out and scored 4 points off Connolly. Like, I mean, and then told me on the show, I rang him on the Monday and says, well, I didn't actually agree with that. I wanted to mark him, but one of the selectors told me, go at him. You put him on the back foot. And he actually wanted to mark him. He ended up scoring 4 points off. He says, very good advice I got. But like, I mean, he loves man marking, Colm. And maybe some of the cornerbacks these days, they love being footballers and they don't love. Chrissy looks like he really enjoyed that. He enjoyed turning his back on the play and watching McBrearty and just doing that job for the team. More of that.
Yeah, look, we spoke about it for the last few weeks about this, about, you know, the art of defending and that man on man, and that's where the game's going as well. Like, I think, you know, teams are still defending, but the man on man stuff's coming back, and the importance of being technically very good at defending in terms of moving your body, getting your feet right, you know, being a wee bit aggressive. And, you know, like, typically the last number of years, I know, like, Tyrone, I can always refer back to Tyrone, obviously, in that, like, we nearly become too nice in a way, if, you know, a lot of our men, because we were playing, with so much comfort, you had men back and you were shifting left and right, and you didn't really have to be aggressive to players. You know, there was always a swarm of players to help you out. Well, like, watching that, I know Derry had men back, but again, by and large, man on man, McCaig was brilliant. That wee bit of nastiness. I remember watching Gerald Keane do it to Sean way back years ago up in Healy Park that day that Tyrone never scored in the first half, where he was just dogging him. Like, and it was like, okay, fine limits in the game, but it was nice to see that art of defending is back. And, you know, McCaig done it to a tee at the weekend, and, you know, just unfortunate at the end. Like, I kind of say that's a struggle with a defender. You can mark him out for the whole game and just takes one chance for a forward to win the game. So look, a brilliant performance by him, and like I said, that he's, you know, he can hold his head up high for from that.
Well, that's it. And just to finish up on the point, like, I wouldn't be too critical of him on the McBrearty loop, because we've talked about McBrearty and Dean Rock being the best on the loop, but the best loop you do is you loop just at the time your man's running past, and your man, your teammate almost distracts your man or gets in the way of him kind of following you. Do you know what I mean, Alan? Like, and he nearly got to the block. I wouldn't be too critical. He's bringing cornerback play back, lads. So we should be, like, without running up the field, look for a bloody score. That annoys me. Cornerbacks should know their place. And while you talked about the modern game, Alan, I'm not about this, but I want the cornerbacks. I want the two of them to stay back, marking their man, stretch the game, and that's it. But anyways,
that's just sort of, so you wouldn't have to chase the cornerback back with it. But that's what it was like years ago.
Yeah,
backs used to, the cornerbacks used to just mark, and you wouldn't have to worry about them going now.
In a funny way, I'd take Mark and Chrissy McCaig. I'd take Mark and Chrissy McCaig over Sean Powter, for example.
I don't know.
What? Well, I wouldn't like either, because what? Anyways, listen, we've gone over time. You have to go, Ellen. We'll leave it there. Chrissy McKay, congratulations. Performance of the weekend. We'll be back on Thursday. Big weekend next weekend. It feels like the championship is finally here. So we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
But this little dink ball, you don't know, one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, I Cuffrey, you Free State bastard. And next thing I hear, you have no fucking jurisdiction up here.